For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time for the 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And, well, Jeff, let's just start with a quick little preview for tomorrow. Georgia and Tech from 1992. What should we know about that game?
92 is one of those years that wound up 10-2, but we were better than both Tennessee and Florida that year, and we really blew the Tennessee game, turned it over six times, and they still they had a 4th and 13, and we blitzed, and they picked it up, and they got it, and beat us 34-31. Then in the game in Jacksonville, Garrison only had 14 carries, and we got up early on a long run from Frank Harvey and lost that one 26-24. I will honestly say, the personnel we had on that team, I thought that team was national championship good. I thought they were good enough where we could have won the whole thing. I mean, if you're talking about Eric Zier, Garrison Hurst, Andre Hastings, Shannon Mitchell, Terrell Davis as a backup tailback, and Randall Godfrey leading that defense. But we held on to beat Auburn. And, you know, it all kind of came together that night against Texas. It was just 2 years prior, keep in mind. They rolled into Sanford Stadium and embarrassed us, and they went on and did their thing. So to kind of get it back after beating them in 91, then we beat them 31-17, and Garrison broke the SEC record, held by Herschel Walker, for total touchdowns, 21, and rushing touchdowns, 19, in a season. And he kind of did a little Heisman pose there at the end. And then to go on to beat Ohio State, it kind of put a little bit of the bloom back on the rose for that season. That was the first time we had gone 10-2 since the 83 team went 10-1-1. So that win over Tech was certainly a highlight moment.
Yeah, that year for the Heisman kind of takes me back to our first hour, and we started talking about those Best Picture winners and some of the bad ones and the movies they beat out. That was certainly Gino Toretta over Garrison Hurst and Marshall Faulk was
right. And even if Chi hadn't have won it, it's well, yeah, Marshall Faulk was pretty good too. I mean, that might be the all-timer when you look at who finished number one was, and then look at who was directly behind him at second and third, and say, wrong guy definitely won.
Yeah, because even like some of the bad ones that ended up winning, like even some like Rashan Salaam, like, I don't know who, like, who notable finished second right behind him. And
right, but they're just some years, and I know I've said this a million times on this fine award-winning program, but I'll always go back to 82 when Herschel won with Elway second, Dickerson third, and Anthony Carter fourth. That's the strongest 1-2-3 ever.
Yeah, I would think that's a no-brainer there,
right?
For sure.
And then so that's a year like when Salaam, who was a terrific back in Colorado, had a great team that year. But you know, an Elway or Dickerson as a second or third place finisher would have been the best guy that year. You know, it just so happened that, you know, it's like we were talking about 2011 Alabama and LSU. They just all came out in the same season. I mean, Herschel should have won it as a freshman, and George Rogers was a great back. George was a tremendous running back, tremendous. Herschel had the better year. George had the better season, and Herschel outdueled George 1-on-1. George had a great game against us, but Herschel had a better game. But in 81, I'll save him being Herschel's number one fan of all time, Marcus Allen deserved to win it that year. I mean, he went for over 2,000 yards. But, you know, Herschel's sophomore year probably wins in at least 50% of other seasons. But when you got a USC tailback going for over 2,000 yards, it's hard to beat that.
Yeah, that's back when I guess those West Coast teams got a little more run than they did now, because now I think being on the West Coast is actually a legitimate detriment to winning the Heisman.
So. Because every game's on TV, there weren't games coming on at 10. So if USC was on television, that game was kicking off at 3:30. So they were, you know, basically either playing Notre Dame or, you know, late 70s, they'd play Alabama. Or if they were playing in the Coliseum, that game was kicking at 12:30 Pacific time, so it wasn't a factor. But it is Brayman, there's nothing better, like we say, than when the dogs win, getting a little Pac-12 after dark to cap off the night. So, yeah, we'll see, like, say, USC and Utah played an incredible game. Was that 2 years ago? I think that game went double OT. It was something like 27-23. That's a hard watch for a lot of fans.
I don't think there's ever been a Pac-12 after dark game that wasn't, like, wildly entertaining. I think that's, like, a verifiable fact, yes.
Well, and this did Cal have a run there? Was it back-to-back weeks even? They won on a Hail Mary, then lost on a Hail Mary?
Yeah, that happened a couple years ago. But, yeah, I feel like every Pac-12 after dark game ends up like that. You get up and, like, yeah, I was up till 3 because the game went into multiple overtimes or – was a ridiculous scoring affair, so there's a lot of clock stoppages and it just drags on and on and on. But it's has there ever been a Pac-12 after dark game where the final was just like, you know, it was 28-0 and it was blowout?
Right. Well, I mean, just thinking of some of those stories I've had before too, like especially like if the dogs kick off at noon and you know, I'm up at 6 doing all, we're all doing our shows and all that going around, Georgia wins, you get off there, I'm like, all right, I'm going to flip on the game. You know, I might fall asleep around 10:30, and then 10:30, 11, you just doze off for about an hour. Then you wake up, and it's like you've been asleep for a couple hours. Like, oh, my gosh, the middle of the fourth quarter. You know, this thing's 31-30. And then you're just like, oh, can this possibly be? Can they still be going? Yes. The Pac-12 after dark's great. My old buddy Andy Stewart told me a great story, too. Granted, this wasn't Pac-12, but it was a late-nighter. He said it was kind of a full day of Georgia football, and, you know, he had gotten into the brown water before noon. And he said, I passed out about 10:30 or 11. I woke up middle of the fourth quarter. He said his girlfriend at the time was just glued to the TV. It was late in the fourth quarter. You could probably find the year on this. I'd say it was probably about 94, 95. And it was Brayman, San Diego State, and BYU. So who'd have thought might have been playing. And it was 52-52 with like 3 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah.
That's late night college football from out west. It's awesome.
Yeah. And I don't think every game ever has been like that. Even now as we've moved into Pac-12 after dark.
And it really is good. You know, a lot of times that'll be the game that's kind of the version of what we'll get or what we used to get with the TBS game. Back in the day where it'd be one of the big six, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn, LSU, playing Ole Miss, Vandy, Kentucky, or Mississippi State. So you'd think, like, okay. And a lot of times you will get that, you know, or it's going to be USC against Arizona. But even if it is something like that, occasionally you'll get, say, USC and Washington, two of the big boys. Even if it's two of the traditional bottom feeders, if it's Oregon State and Cal, it doesn't matter. That thing is a lock to be a dandy.
Yeah. I think it always has been.
So that's when you talk about capping off a magnificent college football Saturday, you got to have a Georgia win, of course. And then on top of that, just lock it in. And, you know, if you've got a couple of good SEC games on at 7 and 7:30, and, you know, let's say Ohio State's in a good one, or Michigan, and Notre Dame. I do like the Notre Dame, that 2:30 kickoff helps to stagger things.
Yeah, you get an hour of that before the 3:30 main event for the SEC.
So if it's one where Notre Dame's playing a good one and that one's getting, you know, towards the end when the SEC game's going into the fourth quarter, that's a good day of watching. But yeah, if you do get, especially if it's a marquee matchup, let's say you get like a Stanford and Washington at the 10 o'clock or 10:30 game, what a great way to close the night.
Yeah, the Pac-12 was complaining a year ago. They wanted those games moved earlier, and they were even flirting, remember, about a year ago during the offseason with a noon kickoff to be on that Fox Big Noon Saturday. That'd be, 9 a.m. there.
Earth to the Pac-12. That's a horrible idea.
Well, I think an equally horrible idea would be eliminating Pac-12 after dark. That's their brand.
Yeah, of course it is.
It might hurt them in the Heisman voting, but who cares?
No, it really does. And listen, we all know this. Most Heisman winners, there's been RG3 has jumped up there and won it. I mean, USC won the thing three times in 4 years. If a quarterback or running back from USC is having a phenomenal season, it's not going to hurt him there.
Now, Marcus Mariota did pull it off,
thank
too.
You,
but
for
it's...
Oregon. But, yeah, now if you play, and they had a great year, but, yeah, if you play for Oregon State, Arizona, yeah, it's probably going to be a little bit tougher.
Yeah, all things being equal, I would think it, you know, comes down to the end. I'd lean towards somebody playing on the East Coast, though, than one of those West Coast guys.
It is a bigger difference now because every game is on TV. And again, back in the day when you were only on TV two or three times a year, and that was always going to be at 3:30, it didn't matter where you were. But now, you know, with a majority of their games – you know, being played at night, and especially if they're the 10:30 kickoffs, yeah, I think it could be held against. You know, Luck finished. Did he finish second twice, or have a second and a third?
Well, you know, Stanford's had that run of seconds.
That's right. I mean, Gerhardt did it.
Yeah, you know, Gerhardt, Luck. I think Luck did do it twice because McFadden did it twice too.
Right.
But then, yeah, then they had McCaffrey.
That's right. That's right.
And then, yeah, Bryce Love.
So, yeah, they had – so I guess it was Gerhardt, Luck, McCaffrey, and Love. All four finished second there in about a 6-7 year period?
Yeah, and then you throw in there Elway finishing second.
Yeah, he did.
And I think even before – he did end up winning it, but I think even Plunkett had a second before he won it. So, Stanford's had a ton of runner-ups.
So, he might have – so, Plunkett – Sullivan won in 71. Plunkett won it in 70. So maybe he finished second to Steve Owens, maybe?
Yeah, might have been, yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you, the worst Heisman Trophy vote ever is a vote where the right guy won it, but the fact that Bo Jackson barely beat Chuck Long is the worst vote of all time.
I will say Iowa did go 10-1 that season.
Yeah, but come on, Bo. Bo and Chuck Long?
Is that still the closest vote? It was for a long time.
It has to be because the it was
that. I wonder Desmond.
It was 1509 to 1464 wow. was the total point difference.
I just said Desmond. I meant it. Charles Woodson and Peyton was probably right there with it. But yeah, that was one where, like you say, even though Bo won, so he's clearly the best guy. Not his fault they lost four games that season.
Yeah, Woodson over Peyton was pretty close, too.
But at least both of those guys did go. Now, Peyton's an all-time great, but Charles Woodson was a great player in the NFL as well. And Michigan did win a share of the national title that year.
Yeah, maybe it was closer, but – and he went to Michigan.
Right.
You know, whereas you know, Chuck Long was at Iowa, but
– but that was like Iowa's best season ever. Then they lost to UCLA, I think 42-10 in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, but he had about 150 more first-place votes than Peyton did.
Wow. By the way, that Rose Bowl, even from some Iowa fans, there's some whispers about that game.
Which Rose Bowl?
When Iowa went 10-1 and got beat, I swear I think the score was 42-10. They had a great player in that game who also had, in a famous Buffalo-Cleveland playoff game, had a TD pass go right through his hands. But I got a buddy who went to Iowa who's convinced something funny was happening that day.
Well, that's what happens when you get your fingers cut off at your knuckles. You try and catch passes, and you're all knuckles.
Oh, man.
All right, moving on in the 5 at 5. Jeff, there has been some talk for the for this offseason and looking forward to, you know, the college football year and whatever it might look like and however many teams might play and however it might go. But if it's not a full season with everybody playing and all the action, is whoever wins the national title, is it an asterisk? Is it tainted in any way?
No. If we win it all, if it winds up being, you played 8 SEC games in Tech and then went on and won one postseason game. If we win it, we win it, baby.
Well, I think to me the answer to this question is when it comes to, all right, are some teams sitting out or some conferences sitting out, is Clemson playing?
Right.
Is Ohio State playing?
Right.
Is Bama playing? Is Oklahoma playing? If the answer to the question there is yes, then any team that wins the national championship will be a legitimate national title winner.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. Because the other deal, too, like we said, you know, when you're running through these things, that, you know, there are four playoff spots. But in essence, in the SEC, you're fighting for one or two slots. Because we obviously the last 2 years, the SEC championship game loser has been eliminated. Even though the last 2 years, of course, Georgia was the victim there. You had number one versus number four, number one versus number four. I mean, in theory, whoever loses that game, both sides, they should not drop in the polls.
No. I mean, it's always, if the number one and number two team plays and one of those teams has to lose, like, I've never thought, well, the number three team, which wasn't playing the number one or number two team, just automatically deserves to move ahead there.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, but, you know, I get it. College football's been one of those where you don't like rematches, even though we see rematches in all other sports, but we did end up seeing one in 2011, and that led pretty swiftly to the creation of the playoff to make sure that did not happen again.
And then you know who got to go without making the SEC championship game. They didn't put themselves in danger. Maybe that could be another one. Coach Saban, are you planning on just losing the Iron Bowl again so you don't have to play in the SEC championship?
Well, I think it's funny because the year before that happened to another you-know-who.
Mm-hmm.
And
same coach was up there saying, hey, in my mind, you know, You got to win your league to get in.
Right.
And then the next year is like, well, what are we looking for? The four best teams. Like, well, hang on now. Last season you said.
Well, and I think Saban might have even made that point about, like, hey, that's not fair. We have to play. And they're not they can just sit around and get healthy.
But the next year it was, well, no, are we looking for the four best teams?
Yeah. Well, that was all started. There's following the lead of Kirk Herbstreit back in 2006 and 7 when he changed his tune from rematches are good to no. Rematches are right back. That wouldn't even be a rematch, but it was just bottom line. It was the Georgia didn't win the East, so they couldn't be in the championship game.
That's one of my two favorites, catching Saban. That one, and when he was at Miami basically pounding his fist going, how many times do I have to say it? I will not be the head coach at Alabama. And then the next day, we all know what happened. And the greatest, too, though, was Urban Meyer when he jumped on that reporter who asked him about getting back into football when he retired from Florida to even think about putting on colors other than the orange and blue. And then 10 months later, hail Buckeyes.
Yeah. Well, he put the orange and blue back on because he was at that Miami-Florida game last year.
He's angling. And like I said, Florida State didn't have a full enough boat for him to jump into. I do think there's a part of him, like if Harbaugh went back to the NFL, he would go to Michigan. It wouldn't be I don't know, it's – you know, oh yeah, we can't. You know, if you can't wear blue on campus here, or if your name has an M in it. Of course, he's got an M in his last name. Yeah, you know, we're gonna strike it out. We're gonna put a piece of tape over it. He would go to Michigan in a heartbeat. And I'm telling you, if it was a deal, if you flash back to like when Jimmy Johnson left to go to the Cowboys, he'd have jumped all over that Miami job to go against Florida.
Absolutely, he would have. I could see him with his eyeballs on that Texas job, too.
For sure, just because of Tom Herman.
Yeah. Speaking of Michigan, and I don't know, but I guess their offensive coordinator, Josh Gattis, now, this really is like, this isn't really a ringing endorsement of a guy, but he tweeted yesterday, since 2015, that, you know, Jim Harbaugh has the eighth best record in the country. Like, wow, really? The eighth best at Michigan.
Okay.
And then brought up some of their out-of-conference games that they've played. And basically, he was ripping on schools that play 1AA's.
Okay.
I think he was maybe ripping, I guess he was ripping on Michigan State. I don't know what he was doing. But it's like, really, this isn't working. The way you and
just stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
So then he started bringing up some of their out of conference games, like Utah, BYU, Florida three times, you know, on and on and on. But the thing that people got back to him on was, you know, you didn't schedule all those games. Like, some of those were in bowl games, right?
Yes.
So, like, oh, yeah, you played South Carolina and Florida. You didn't schedule that. You played them in a bowl game.
Well,
Alabama?
That.
Yeah, you played Alabama. You played them in a bowl game.
In a bowl game, exactly.
But the other, I can't imagine, like, how embarrassed would I be as a Georgia fan if at some point one of our assistant coaches bragging that our coach had the eighth best record in the country.
Right. It's one of those where...
I mean, that's not terrible, but I mean, come on. Eighth?
Now, hey, listen. If you're Mississippi State, absolutely. But that's where you say, hey, listen, last 5 years, we got one of the 10 best records in college football. But no. Yeah, just...
Yeah, I'd stick with, like, top, you know, top four or five. If you've got that, you know, like over the last couple of years, I mean, you know, over the last, you know, four seasons, Kirby Smart's got the fourth best record in the country. Hey, that's good, but yeah. Hey, since 2015, Coach Jim he's got the eighth best record in the country, and we don't play one double A's. Mm-hmm. Like, all right.
Like, but some teams do.
Yeah. But like, of all those games that you threw out there, let's see, two of them. Two, three, four, five of them were bowl games.
And here's the other problem too. Your biggest rival, who's 17-2 against you the last 19 years, they can say, "Well, all right, if you want to go down that road, guess who we've been playing in bowl games? Clemson, you know,
yeah,
Washington, Oregon, Rose Bowls, Notre Dame, Fiesta Bowls. So, yeah, we've been playing big games like that too. We've been in the playoffs.
Yep, they've been. But hey, they've got the eighth best record in the country since 2015.
And here's the other thing too: Michigan has the most wins in college football history.
Yeah, they do, but they're eighth under Jim Harbaugh. That's like with USC. USC's had they've had the most NFL draft picks. They've had the second most first round draft picks.
SC has.
Yeah.
Who's got does Miami or Notre Dame have the most first rounders?
The most first rounders is, I believe it is the Irish.
Okay. But SC's got the most overall draft picks.
Most overall.
And I think they've got the most Hall of Famers, too.
Oh, Ohio State has the most first-rounders.
Okay.
Yeah. So USC second, Notre Dame is third. But, okay. But anyway, no, you know, USC had two guys drafted last year.
Yeah, and Utah had seven.
Yes, they did. All right, there's today's 5 at 5, brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.